Supervisor says about you? Supervisor says, Tony, that you're the best worker he has. And that you come early, you stay late, hasn't been an accident on your crew for 2 years. Supervisor likes you. Rough, tough, sometimes angry Tony started to cry. He said, no one has ever said anything good about me before. And Tony was so taken by what Sherman had told him that he invited him to his little mountaintop hut for supper. And when Sherman walked in, Tony introduced Sherman. He said, this is the man who told Tony that he did a good thing. And Maria, his wife, was all smiles, and she said, it's been like Christmas around here all day because of what you said. Well, about 12 years later, Tony and Sherman met again. Tony was now the supervisor on a railroad construction crew, and they sat down to reminisce about old times. And Tony said that the day you told me that I did a good job changed my life. You made a difference in my life. And I haven't been the same since. And if you hadn't said that to me, I probably would have murdered somebody. Well, we love those stories, don't we? Stories about making a difference. We love to hear about a Sherman who says one little thing changes another life completely around. We love stories about how someone works with a child and changes that child's life. We like to hear those stories from the inner city about how one of our ministries has made a difference in somebody's life. Love to hear those stories from Eastern Europe, from Ukraine, about how a ministry of this congregation has taken someone who's grown up under godless communism and ushered them into Christianity. We love to hear those stories about how we make a difference. The book of Philippians in the New Testament is a book about making a difference. In fact, it's the New Testament thank you letter, because the Philippians had made a difference in Paul's life. And so he writes them this four-chapter book to tell them that you really helped me. You really made a difference in my life. And as I read through the book, I count 10 different times that Paul will make reference to some difference that they had made in his life. Chapter 1, verse 3, for example, he refers back to Acts 16, when they were all together, when Paul had established that church. Chapter 1, verse 5, he says, we have partnership in the gospel. We have koinonia. We're working together. You're making a difference in my ministry. Chapter 1, verse 7, he says, you're the ones who stayed with me when I got thrown into prison. Chapter 1, verse 9, I feel your love that you have for me. Chapter 1, verse 19, I sense the prayers that you're praying for me. Chapter 1, verse 25, he says, your growth in Christianity is an encouragement to me. Chapter 2, verse 25, you sent Epaphroditus, and he's made a difference in my life. Chapter 4, verse 3, you stood with me side by side, Paul says. Chapter 4 and verse 14, he says, you stood with me in troubled times. In chapter 4, verse 16, that's number 10, he says, twice you sent me money. 10 times in the book of Philippians, he talks about what a difference the Philippians had made in his life. Well, wouldn't you like to be the Philippians? Wouldn't you like to be the Philippians? You help Paul and you get your name in the New Testament. Don't you figure they've got passes through the pearly gates, that they're going to have some of the best condos up there on Pearl Street when we all get there, because the Philippians made a difference to Paul. Well, what happens when we serve and we don't make a difference? What happens when we serve and Tony ends up killing somebody? What happens when we try to help get a couple back together and they end up going through just a terrible divorce? What happens when we're working with a teenager and he or she goes back on drugs? What happens when we're trying to help a child and the child runs away again and again and again and again? What happens if you're preaching and you get thrown in prison? What happens if you're preaching and those who are preaching with you start to preach out of rivalry? What happens when those you're working with turn on you and start fussing among one another? That's what was going on in Philippi. And that's the reason Paul, in part, is writing the letter, because those who have been working side by side with him, they're now fussing side by side. Those who have been helping push each other up to the top of the mountain are now pushing each other off the top of the mountain. Those who had been so in focus are now so out of focus. And Paul sees the difference he was making among them starting to crumble. There's an old college play that has several actors and actresses on the stage when the curtain opens. And they don't know why they're there. And they start talking and they say, well, they start fussing with, why are we here? What's the purpose of this? What are we supposed to be doing right now? And they start to banter back and forth and fuss among each other. And then one of them notices that there's some construction materials on the stage. And they conclude, well, we're to build something. And then they start to fuss about what it is they're to build. Some want to build this, others want to build that, some want to build this. And then they hear a voice off stage. They can't quite make it out. It's a menacing voice. And they say, maybe we're supposed to build a wall to protect us from our enemies. And so for a brief moment, they throw their fussing aside and there's camaraderie as they build this wall. And then a man enters from the offstage. And he's carrying a roll of papers under his arms. He says, stop, stop, what are you doing? What are you doing with all this material? And they say, we're building a wall because of our enemies. And he said, no, 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 I'm the architect. You're not supposed to build a wall. You're supposed to build a bridge to those people. Well, that's what was going on in Philippi. Instead of building the bridges to one another, they were building barricades. They were building walls. They had forgotten their vision. And Paul was afraid that all the difference he had made among them was going to vanish. Well, what do you do? What do you do when you want to make a difference, but you see it just vanishing in your eyes? Paul deals with this in the book of Philippians, but one place he takes it up in a pointed way is in the text that John read a moment ago. And I want to read it again, beginning in verse 14. Chapter 2 of Philippians, do all things without grumbling or questioning, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain. Paul wants to make a difference among the Philippians. And so he says, don't grumble, don't murmur, don't complain, don't build those walls. They're getting in the way of me making a difference. He says, I don't want to grow old as an old man and then realize that all the work that I did among you was for naught because you've destroyed what I've built. I don't want to run the race in life thinking that I've won that race and then I cross the finish line, turn around, found out I've lost. I don't want to be that way. I want to make a difference and I want you to cooperate so that my difference will be seen. And then Paul has a remarkable line. It's verse 17. He wants to make a difference. And then he says this. But even if I am to be poured out as a libation upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. Even if I don't make a difference, I'm willing to be poured out as an offering for your faith. To understand that one line, we have to go back, way back to Leviticus 23, verse 13. It's Passover. And they have just built the altar out of stones and put the wood and the fire on it. And they've offered the sacrifice, the sacrificial animal. And it's been burned on the altar. And then they bring the cereal offering, the wheat offering, and they burn it on the altar. And then the priest takes a quart of wine and he takes the cork out of the quart and he pours it on the altar and the wine runs down onto the wood and onto the stones and down into the ground. And not a drop of that wine touches any human lips. Not a single drop of the wine satisfies any thirst. Not a single drop of the wine makes it into any stomach. It's just poured out on the altar. In order to understand this verse, we have to go to texts like Mark chapter 10, verse 45. The disciples had been fussing among each other, and Jesus, seeing that fussing going on, says this, one of his statements that gives his purpose. He says, for the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. He came to make a difference. He came to serve us. He came to change our lives. He came not to be served, but to serve. But then there's that little line. And to give his life as a ransom for many. He came to be poured out. In order to understand this, we have to go back to 1 John chapter 3, verse 16. By this we know love, that even as he laid down his life at the cross, so we lay down our lives for the brethren. He laid down his life, we lay down our life. Lay down a life to be a ransom to be poured out like wine. You see, not every time we serve do we make a difference. We're not all Shermans all the time. We're not all Philippians making a difference in the life of Paul. In fact, the book of Philippians shows us the real downside of service. Paul served. And what did he get? He got thrown in prison. What did he get? He was hungry. He was abased. And the people he were working with were falling apart in front of his very eyes. It's one thing to be poured out like wine and then to be a hero. But it's quite another thing to be poured out like wine and find yourself a doormat. It's one thing to be poured out like wine and find your name in the newspaper. It's another thing to be poured out like wine and find yourself in obscurity and suffering at that. Are we willing to be poured out when after we pour ourselves out, we look into the bottom of the bucket and we find that what we've done has hardly even wet the bottom? What this text is doing is it's calling us to re-examine our motivations for what we do, our motives for service. And the text is saying, are you willing to be poured out? Not be poured out and check attendance. Not be poured out and count baptisms. Not be poured out and look at the statistics. Not be poured out and see how many headlines you're in. Not be poured out and see what kind of thank you notes you get in the mail. Not be poured out and see what kind of plaques are on the wall. But be poured out to the last breath. And to be poured out to the last drop. Cliff Johnson tells about a young mother who came into one of those government-sponsored inner-city nutritional centers. She was a poor woman. She had a baby in her arms, and she was feeding the baby out of a bottle, and the bottle was filled with something red. And a tired caseworker came out and saw the mother. And she was about ready to get out her lecture on how bad it is to give babies Kool-Aid. She thought it was Kool-Aid. And just as she started her lecture, the young mother started to cry. And through the tears, she said, I've been out of money for a week, and I didn't have any food. I haven't had any food for myself in 3 days, and I spent my last dollar on formula, and then it ran out, and so I went to McDonald's. The baby was hungry. I got the only two things they give away free there. I got some water, mixed it with some ketchup, and that's what she was feeding the baby. I don't know what happened to that mother. I don't even know the name of that caseworker. Likely she was on crack cocaine. Likely the caseworker made no difference at all in her life. Likely that woman's had another baby. The first baby may even be dead. She at this very moment may be in another McDonald's mixing ketchup and water together. Are we willing to be poured out for people like that? Are we willing to be poured out for people who can't give us anything back? Are we willing to be poured out when we know there's a big hole in the bottom of the bucket we're being poured into? Are we willing to be poured onto the altar, across the wood and the rocks, and into the ground? Many of you will remember Wayne Reed helped us start our Life Skills Lab. Now works a similar program in Brooklyn, in New York City, at a church called St. Anne's Church. He tried to help a homeless man named John Kosak. John had son of a doctor, been sleeping in the streets of Brooklyn Heights for 20 years, slept in the doorways every night. The park supervisor said John would come down and bathe himself at the latrine at the park on a regular basis. One shop owner said John Kosak was a gentleman, wouldn't hurt anybody. He'd stand on the street corner at Henry Street, Brooklyn Heights, every day at noon with a cup. Have any change? Have any change? Have any change? Shopkeepers would occasionally give John some food. Wayne tells of coming to work August the 10th, 1992. There was a crowd gathered around the door to St. Anne's. Police cars with the blue lights were there. John Kosak's limp body was resting against the front door of the church. His throat had been slit. The police said that he was killed for a bottle of whiskey. He was 63. Wayne Reed tried to help John Kosak. A lot of good it did. All they have to show is a stain on the church door. That's the very issue that Paul was wrestling with. And he gives his motivation. He gives his reason for service. And it's one of the clearest texts in all of the Bible. Chapter 2, verse 5. Have this mind among yourselves. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, have this mind among yourselves, who though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself, and became obedient unto death, even death on a cross. I don't know very much about Will Allen Drumgoole. I researched him, died in 1934. Apparently didn't make much of a difference. But he wrote these lines of poetry. An old man going on a lone highway came at evening, cold and gray, to a chasm vast and deep and wide, through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. That sullen storm had no fears for him. But he turned when he reached the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. Old man, said a fellow pilgrim near, you're wasting strength in building here. Your journey will end with the ending day. You never again must pass this way. You've crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build you the bridge at eventide? The builder lifted his old gray head. Good friend, in the path I have come, he said, there followeth after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way, this chasm that has been not to me. So that fair-haired youth may a pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I am building the bridge for him. Well, Drumgoole has caught for us the essence of what the cross was about. Jesus came to the chasm and he built the bridge. And because he built the bridge, we can cross and cross in service. Jesus came to make a difference. He did for Paul, and that's the reason Paul was willing to be poured out. And Christ begins to make the difference in our lives when we trust him in faith, when we walk across the bridge that he built, when we change our lives of sin, put them on in baptism, and then commit ourselves to being a servant like he was a servant. If we can minister to you and in any way help you become a Christian today, just make your way to the front right now as we stand, as we sing this song. Would you?